Welcome to Film Forum's podcast. The following event was recorded on March 2nd, live at our theaters located at 209 West Houston Street in Manhattan.
It's our great honor to welcome Lee Bulman. This film just turned 50 years old. It's hard to believe. It's a departure for Bergman, but it's one of the films that's been sort of overlooked, don't you think?
It's been tremendously overlooked, and
I think you have to hold it a little higher.
Is
it
on? Do you hear me if I talk like
no.
this? What?
Now it's on.
No, it's on.
Okay.
Anyway. It was even hard for him to raise the money, although he had done Persona and so, but it hadn't yet become that kind of world success. But he was very, very proud of this movie, and more so of the second half, because, you know, obviously the first half, if you have a very small budget, it's very hard to show a real war. You Americans have always known how to do that, exploding and all of that.
This has more explosions and pyrotechnics than any other Ingmar Bergman movie.
Oh, it does, but even compared to you, yeah, it's not so much. And the and the Japanese,
not me personally,
they do all this dancing and war and whatever. But... And Ingmar didn't have that. But the second half, he was so proud of it because it says what war does to people. It doesn't only kill them or make them to be refugees and so, and he shows all of that, but it also makes them lose their soul.
Right. You will later work with refugees, which we'll talk about later. Before we get into this, though...
Yeah.
I want to clear up something. Some people may not realize that you are not Swedish.
No, I'm Norwegian. There is a great difference. They say that, what is it, through a meadow, there are hundreds of Swedes running, followed by one Norwegian.
We think of you as the greatest Swedish star since Garbo and Ingrid Bergman, and you're actually the greatest star since Sonja Henie, really. But you were actually, all these Bergman films we're looking at, you're actually speaking Swedish with a Norwegian accent.
Well, absolutely. The Swedes thought I spoke Norwegian, and the Norwegians said, oh my God, I mean, she didn't really learn Swedish. So it was some kind of a problem. So yes, I spoke with a kind of heavy accent.
He didn't write that into the script explaining it, though.
No, like, okay. I mean, no, we did 11 films or 10 films. He couldn't write in every script, she's really Norwegian, trying to speak Swedish.
You've written that Persona was the happiest time you ever had on a film, but this film is very important to you. Why is that? Why is shame so important to you?
Shame is so important to me because I think more so today than it was at that time. I know my character says or feels at some place, I feel like I'm in someone else's dream and they have told me to participate in it. And you see that these people, they don't even know why there is a war or what the war is about, which is very right for today, the wars. You don't know why you suddenly lose your home and lose everything that was dear to you and often lose your life. You do not know why did this happen to me. And I feel that Ingmar, 50 years ago, he made a movie, and you can see in the end those who are no refugees, they are on a boat in the water, although the Vietnamese at that time, they did come from Vietnam on the South China Sea, on the water, but you never saw that on TV. You never saw the horror they had on the water. But Ingmar made a movie that points to that time, and he made a movie that points to this time where we see people again and again on the water, fleeing from their home to another place. And that's why I think he is sensational. And he was told at that time, and when he did his next movie, Passion of Anna, he was told, you have no interest in what is happening in the world. You are not engaged in something. He was engaged. And I think anyone who sees that movie sees that he puts his finger to what happens to people. Coldness, indifference to each other, and in the end they really lose their soul. They are broken.
But this movie was attacked at the time from left-wing press.
Yes.
For not being committed enough, not being direct enough, not addressing Vietnam.
Absolutely. This movie and then the next movie which he did not so long after, called The Passion of Anna, which I know you are showing tomorrow.
Yes.
The one who was the assistant to the cinematographer. He one day he said, we have to stop working now. From now on, Ingmar Bergman, you must know that all your creative impulses and whatever you want to do, you have to discuss with all of us. And this was the revolutionary people of that time. And Ingmar said, you know, I'm not going to discuss my creative impulses with any of you, but if you don't want to be here anymore and don't accept what I'm saying, you can leave. You will have your whole salary, but you have to leave the movie right now. And no one left. But that's how it was 50 years ago.
Well, Passion of Anna was made in 68. This was filmed in 67, so that was right at the time of all the...
That was right at the time, and it's incredible to believe that that happened. That was the kind of revolutions they did when they didn't take part in what was really happening.
This must have been a really physically challenging film for you. I mean, there's fire, explosions, you're running around, you're hitting the dirt. He got you very close to the fire when the dead child is on the ground there.
You know, I've been thinking about that.
Yeah.
Because we were living together at this time. And when I saw pictures and so from this movie, or I was thinking about the time, I would say if a journalist asked me, you know, what about where you by the fire? And so I said, well, you know, we quarreled in the morning and then I was sitting by the big fire and he said, go closer to the fire and go closer to the fire. I mean, that's how self-occupied you get. And I would even say when I was in the boat in the end.
Yes.
And I wasn't that very much clothed.
It was 30 below.
It was very cold. And Ingmar was standing on the bridge and he was full of clothes and things. And I would say to the journalist again, self-occupied, oh, you know, he was there and he was warm and so. And he told us in the boat to stay there for lunch and so I would freeze and so. And you know, it's not happened. That is not the truth. And I've been thinking about this very much lately. That was me talking because it sounded like a good story. I was dressed the way you are when you suddenly end your life actually in a boat. I was not warm. And that's why he wanted me to look like that. I was in the fire very close to a house that was burning up. He wanted people to see that people were very close to a fire and they could lose their life. It had nothing to do with myself. And that is something it took me 50 years to learn. Mm-hmm. It wasn't about me personally and because we had a quarrel in the morning. It was because I was with a great film artist and I made it personal.
This was filmed on the island of, help me with my pronunciation, Fura. We would say Pharaoh. You were living with him by that time. And you just mentioned having an argument at breakfast. And there's a breakfast scene in here, and I've noticed that he puts breakfast scenes into a lot of movies. Is there significance? It's always in a bad, and there's always an argument. For example, in scenes from scenes from marriage is when Johan tells Marianne that the cleaning lady caught him with his girlfriend.
Have you seen, what is it called, the new movie by Anderson? Yes, there is the breakfast scene. Yeah. And there is the genius that has to think about what he's going to do with his clothes and his design. And breakfast has to be quiet and good for his soul and everything. And I'm sure the same with Ingmar, you know. There is the breakfast scene. And there he's thinking about what he's going to do, and there I'm sitting and want to talk about.
You've mentioned in a lot of interviews that you had your arguments at breakfast.
Yeah, we had our arguments at breakfast. And
when you split up, you weren't having those arguments, and your working relationship improved.
Exactly.
Okay. That,
no, we had a good working relationship. I take the blame on me, because I do believe if you're making a movie like that, you don't want to hear about your wife's or partner's, you know, problems. You have to think. And when we didn't live together anymore, we became the best of friends, and he didn't have to worry about breakfast that I would kind of... ruin his genius, whatever.
Ingmar didn't like improvisation, did he?
No, Ingmar wanted us to be letter perfect because he felt in the script that is his story. We were not allowed to change one word. And the only time with him that there was an improvisation was in this movie, because he wanted to show Max von Sydow and me as two loving, ordinary, nice people that had no idea what would happen
to them.
That's
when you're drinking the wine.
Yes, and we are sitting there at the table and we are drinking wine. And he said, all you do now, you talk about good things and whatever, and you end up on the ground, you know, lovingly. And so Max and I, we improvised the whole thing and we ended up on the ground lovingly to show that we were just an ordinary loving couple. And in all my time, that is the only time that we were allowed to improvise. I sometimes one could do more out of a scene, because he would, once I was to take my own life in
face to face.
And he did the same there, but it wasn't really improvising. He said, you get the pill box, and then you take the pills, and then you lie down, and you die. That was in the script. And this happened to be in her bedroom from she was a child. And she, me, I'm sitting there, and just before he says camera, I heard him say to someone, you sure you took out Valium and so out of the pill box? And so he was smart. And so camera, and it went, and I had the pill box, and I shiver on my hand. And then suddenly, because I have in the pill box, it shivered more. And I thought inside, oh, this looks good. I'm taking my life, and I'm already shivering. So I was both leave, and I was the character, and I took some pills and then more and more, and I was very impressed because I was shivering and I took a lot of pills, and I emptied the bottle and I sat there, and yes, she starts to get a little tired, and so is he going to stop the camera? No, he didn't stop. And so I lie down on the bed, because no, I felt I was really tired and he doesn't stop the camera. And this was my childhood bedroom, and there was the wallpaper, and the wallpaper had beautiful flowers, and I was thinking, when I was a little child, you know, I was doing this on the wallpaper before I went to sleep, and I got very moved by this thought, and I was doing it, and the camera didn't stop. And she's lying there, but she was really getting tired, and I had a watch, and I looked at the time to see when I was going to die. And And then she closed her eyes. And then Ingmar said, thank you. And then he said, no, I don't have to take my own life. And that's not improvisation somehow. That is allowing the actor. And that shows how great he was with actors. He allows them to create out of a finished script. She takes the pills, she lies down on the bed, and she dies.
So he wouldn't let you touch his words, but he let you interpret the part the way you saw it.
Yeah.
He didn't tell you how to play a scene ever.
It's only bad directors that do that.
Yeah, you've said that you've learned more from bad directors than...
Yeah, yeah. You know, oh, you are so in love, and you come into the room, and there is the man you love, and then you count to three inside, and then you say, I love you, and then you take a pause, and you do this and this. And if you are sensitive at all, the moment you have to do it, you can't do it because, you know, oh, here's the pause and here's my heart. And so bad directors are, they go into details with your creativity.
You've often said that one of Ingmar's, you don't mind if I call him Ingmar, I never met him.
No.
One of his greatest talents was listening.
Yes. He was a listener privately. He would listen and he would watch you. And as a director, the camera's here, and he would always stand by the camera. So when you were acting, you always knew it's the camera, and there is Ingmar. And he would be the most incredible audience because you knew this man sees you more than anyone sees you. This man listens to you more than anyone listens. And the best within you comes out because that is who he is. It's like, you know, you are with somebody you love very much and you look into someone else's eyes, and that is the moment when the deepest of you are coming out because you are seen. And that's what we long for. And that's what Ingmar longed for, to be seen, to be connected to another human being. That's what he always wrote about, connection.
But did you ever question anything in the scripts? Question a character's motivations, anything? Did you? I know that Ingrid Bergman did.
Oh, yeah.
But did you? I was watching scenes from Marriage, and I'm saying, would Marianne really have reacted like that if Johann said he was leaving her? Would she help him pack his bags? You know.
Well, you see, I wouldn't. But what do I know? Maybe I would.
But you never said, Ingmar, I don't think Marianne should do that. No.
No, because this is his script, and I trusted him, and I was playing Marianne. I wasn't playing Liv. And I think for me as an actress is to find Marianne in Liv. And maybe if it hurts so much that my husband is going to leave me, and maybe I suddenly say, do you want me to pack your suitcases? Maybe I would say that because maybe he would understand how warm I was and how caring I was, and maybe he would stay because he saw that with me. There are many reasons that a woman may say that, and that's what he had written. I never questioned. And the only person I think in all the time I worked with him was only Ingrid Bergman, who questioned, and they had a very difficult relationship.
She kind of upset the Bergman universe in a way.
Yes, she did.
She was a Hollywood star. She had the Hollywood...
No, she wasn't the Hollywood star.
I mean, in her method, in the way she had decided on how she was going to play it before she arrived on the set. Ingmar talks about the script supervisor, who I think he was married to at the time, crying over this.
He wasn't married to a script supervisor.
Oh, then
Ingmar? No.
Okay, it was not
no.
his wife.
Okay. After my time, he was married to one person, and she was not script supervisor.
Okay.
Yes. I think we all
but
were.
But she was still crying, the script supervisor.
Yes, she was crying because we were all crying. But I was crying because I felt sorry for Ingrid Bergman.
Really?
Yes, because... you know, today maybe that is how a lot of women would like to be, and maybe even men, to say, this is what I feel and I want to discuss it with you. he was not used to that, and it made him insecure. And Ingmar felt, I have written this script, and I have a reason for these words and these sentences, and I'm giving it to you, and I'm looking forward to seeing your interpretation of it, but I don't want you to write my script. And she did it. You want to know the story?
Do you? Yeah. Okay.
And that is in Autumn Sonata, if you see Autumn Sonata. I used to sit and really admire Ingrid Bergman because she was so real, and she was sick at the time. She had cancer, and she knew she didn't have that much time left. And she wanted, working with Ingmar Bergman, she wanted this to be the best thing I've ever done. And then she found some of the things she said impossible. And there is a long scene where I tell my mother, and I'm 40 years old, and I tell her, you know, every tragedy in my life you made because you left me and you are working instead of staying home with me. And I'm very unfair to her. And it's 3 pages where I accuse her. And the camera was on me because I had most to say. And then the camera is turned on Ingrid Bergman. And she is to say something like, please hold around me. Please love me. And then Ingrid Bergman said, I'm not going to say that. I want to smack her in the face and I want to leave the room. And she meant it. And they started shouting, and then they went out of the room and they shouted, and then the door goes up and the genius comes in and the actress comes in. And yes, she has to say, among other things, hold around me, please love me. And then the magic happened. Yes, she kept the script. But in her eyes, you can see the anger of women who have said for years and years, please, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry I'm doing this, I'm so sorry I'm doing this. And the anger that I have to do it again, the anger of Ingrid Bergman. And she is wonderful in that scene, and you have to see the movie. And she was nominated for an Oscar for it. I was not, although I thought I did everything right. And so they both won. But it was on Ingrid's, what do you say, territory. And I loved that. I could never do that, but... she did it.
By the way, you've gotten enough awards. 2 Oscar nominations for the New Land and for Face to Face.
Yes.
Correct? Okay. We have some production stills from Shame. Do we have a wireless over there?
Yes.
Okay. Would you like to step off the stage and you can help me narrate these slides? Actually, you can narrate these slides. Okay. Oh, here, I'll put this on the table. Okay. Okay, Raymond? First slide. So this is the crew. Oh, there you are.
Yeah.
This is a pretty big crew for a Bergman film. It's about 40 people.
Yes, that would be the most.
Yeah. But still, this must have been... Are you okay there? You want to be do on stage? If you want to tell... There's the script girl who is not married to Ingmar Bergman.
Yes. Yeah. And she, after being a scriptwriter for a long time, she became his producer, Katinka Farago. And was the producer of all his movies until he made Saraband, which was the last one. He trusted her enormously.
He had a lot of women on his crews, especially in later years.
I don't agree with you.
No? Well,
no.
You would know.
How many women do you see?
No, this isn't. Later I'm talking about.
Oh, later?
Yeah, later, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't quote me on it, though. There's Sven Nykvist in the center, and there's Ingmar carrying the script. Who else is there? They're all carrying something in the back. I can't tell.
That's Max von Sydow.
Yes, we know him.
And Gunnar Bjornstrand.
Yes, we know them. They're actors. What about the other people?
And that's Ingmar, of course.
Yeah.
And
Sven in the middle.
And the one with the glasses that you see there.
The beatnik.
Behind Ingmar. He's the one who made the revolution in Passion of Anna.
It figures, yes.
And said, from now on, you listen to us when you create and don't make your own decisions.
We'll show this again tomorrow when we show Passion of Anna. Next slide. Okay, here's something that strikes me. At all the production photos I see for Bergman films, you're always smiling and having a great time.
Oh, we had so much fun.
But the films are not a lot of laughs in the movies, but on the set.
No, there's never. Look at him. He's so happy.
He wasn't.
And I'm so happy. And he, Gunnar Bjornstrand, thinks he's still part of acting a little rehearsal because. He is coming in of the door. He doesn't know that I'm sure we had a joke that he was going to be met with. And he's still acting. We are waiting for whatever funny surprise.
I saw home movies from Cries and Whispers. It looks like a sorority party. Next. Again, more smiles.
No, we smile. And that is Max von Sydow. And no, Gunnar Bjornstrand knows he's part of the whole thing. And he's smiling too. Okay. We were very happy.
Next. It's a great...
And this is the hairdresser, Cilla Drott.
She was a good friend of yours.
Oh, she's a very good friend of mine. And she was always my hairdresser. And when I became, world famous for a while, she followed me and did my makeup and so in American movies, too.
She came with you to America, yeah. I've never seen Max smile like that, actually.
Oh, he is so good.
Next. Okay, here you are on that boat. How cold was it? You said in one interview, 30 below.
Oh, yes.
Centigrade or Fahrenheit?
It was terrible, terrible. And here we are acting, obviously acting. And, each time the camera was not on, I would raise my head and look at Ingmar standing there in his warm, warm clothes and think he was doing this to me. So I'm an actress, and I was pretty good, I think, in that movie. And then I would leave, and I was very self-occupied.
Okay. Next, and here's how Ingmar was dressed.
Look at him. I mean, that is for wind. That will keep wind out. And he has a hat on and everything. And even Sven Nykvist, the cinematographer, is cold there. But I thought it was a great scene, and I'm sorry I didn't understand it at that time.
Next. Okay, this is one of his famous notebooks. He kept lots of notebooks.
Oh, yeah.
This is for shame.
The shame.
Yeah. He kept notebooks. He had different color notebooks, yellow and... Do you know about this or did...
Yeah, he liked to do that. Actually, in his... He built a house when we moved in together in Florida, which still is his house. And a door to his working room on the inside, each day we made hearts or tears or crosses and everything, a whole diary of our life. And when I left, he kept the door, and each spring he would come with a pencil because the sun was shining on that door and it started to bleach, and he would go with a pencil and make it clear again. And now, of course, he's been gone 8-9 years, and nobody does that
But
anymore.
It's still there. It's a museum now.
It's still there, but it's bleached so much that you can hardly see what it is.
You show that there's a wonderful documentary called Is It Ingmar? Leave and Ingmar? Ingmar and Leave.
Yes.
And you show that board in there. Yeah. Next. This is the shooting script for Shame.
And originally it was not called The Shame. It was called The Dream of Shame. And he had this view that walking on an island, someone was coming, someone who maybe wanted good, but also someone who wanted bad stuff to happen. So it was called The Dream of Shame, actually, until we started doing the movie. And The Dream of Shame is also part of The Passion of Anna, because he felt the two movies belonged together.
Next. Okay, this, I think, is one of his, what you have called his special script that he only shared with Sven Nykvist. Is that right? Since my Swedish is rusty.
Because he would write about
But is this is this one of those scripts? Can you see?
Well, he gives the time and something about an airplane, the pictures of the airplanes.
It looks like the...
At 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
In 62 wonderful creative days of working.
Oh.
It's the last thing.
So it's more like a diary.
Yeah, it is a diary.
Speaking of scripts, when you shot the two films from his scripts, did he put in his scripts for you any camera movements or blocking?
Oh, no. I got the script. Actually, Private Confession was a monologue. And so, you know, I was allowed, obviously, to do whatever. And that is the only way I could have worked, because if he had been there, you know, it wouldn't have worked. The only thing, I had to stick to the words. And I wanted to change some words about forgiveness and so. And he did not accept it. But what I could do, the man who needed forgiveness... I let another man do this.
But that's not words.
No.
So that's okay.
Yes.
I'll cherish that moment.
And and that is forgiveness.
Okay, next. Okay, this is his... Oh. He was obviously not the artist Kurosawa and Fellini was. This is a storyboard. And I believe... I'm guessing the fourth one down with the... is you. I don't know.
Oh, it says my name, Leave. And
oh, it does say Leave. Yes, it is. Oh, I was right. How do you like that?
That was nice. That's why we didn't get to see this.
I have to look at. I have to look at the film with this sometime. Okay, next.
But you see how important the close-ups are.
Yes.
You know, these are people, but the close-ups.
What is number five? Is that a martini number five? I can't make that out. Okay. This looks like Kilroy was here over here. Okay, next. Okay, this is actually the shooting script for Persona, but I love the fact that he puts your picture, your pictures and bibbies on the front. Isn't that cute?
Oh, that was an incredible time. And that's when he started to make kind of new movies. And they all, in one way or another, belong together. And you can follow what kind of person he is about with their names. Sometimes it's Elizabeth, sometimes it's Alma. And
he used the same names over and over in his movies, though. Like Karin, then, his mother's name, Karin comes up all the time in the films. And
I believe that Elizabeth very often is a spokesperson for him. I believe in Persona, I was Ingmar. The fear and everything he had in him at that time. And Bibi is the one, please connect with me, please talk to me, until she met herself in a bad way.
Okay. So that's the end of this segment. We want to talk about, we should talk a little about Max von Sydow, because this, Shame, was the second of three films you did with von Sydow. You were like the Hepburn and Tracy of art pictures, the two of you. Did you feel the chemistry with him right away, or was there some period of adjustment?
Oh, no. He's a tremendously likable man, wonderful, you know. I miss him very much, and he has chosen a life now that he lives in some kind of isolation in France, come back to Sweden and so. But we were the best of friends, and it was so great to work with him. chemistry, whatever you say, we were kindred spirits. But I think Ingmar mostly worked with kindred spirits.
Of course, except Ingrid Bergman. But in the end, she became a Bergman actress, I feel, looking at Autumn Sonata. She fits in beautifully. She's not sticking out as a Hollywood actress at all.
And she wasn't. I swear.
No, well,
she
I know.
Wasn't. She was sick. She did everything he asked her to do, you know, lie on the floor. And, you know, she's had this operation of her breasts. And he said, you have to put your arm like this. And she did it. She was the first coming to the studio in the morning, the last to leave. But she had integrity. And she fought for that because also she knew that her days were numbered. And I said, you're going to like him better because once we start shooting, you know, each Wednesday we will see a movie that he has picked and all of us come together and we see this movie. And so she started to look forward to that. And then on the first day, she's there with all of us and we are to see the movie that Ingmar has picked. And it starts, and after 5 minutes, Ingrid gets up and says, no, I don't have time for this, and she left the thing. Of course, that was difficult for him. I understand that. But she was fine.
You were in several other films with Max von Sydow, including The New Land. And can you pronounce the director's name for me? I don't want to. Jan
Troell.
Troell,
and
okay.
He was both a director and a cinematographer. And he wouldn't say very much, you know. He'd let us walk around and improvise much more. Not the words with him either, but improvise more where we wanted to walk and so. And then with his camera, like a painter, he would choose what the camera would show. And like when we were fleeing to United States the last century or two centuries ago, because we had no money and nothing. And there was a long scene where we are sitting on a wagon with the horses,
yes,
with our children, and leaving father and mother far away, and we would never see them again. And I thought, oh, I would be so good sitting there on the wagon, and, you know, it's the last time I'm here in Sweden, and Max too, and we sat and held hands. But then this painter, Jan Troell, when I saw the rushes the next day, oh, you saw us kind of far away, and then you saw the fields full of stones. You couldn't make any grass or anything to live from, and you saw the father and mother, you know, standing there for the last time seeing their children. You didn't see the facial expressions and all of that, because the painter knew what was real and what it means to have to say goodbye forever to your home and to the people who are your mother and your father and go to a new land. And at that time, it was easier to be a refugee than it is today.
Of course, we're referring to The Emigrants and The New Land, which is really one film. But it was released in two parts.
It was two parts.
So Max was in those with you. He was also in a film by Laszlo Benedek and one by Sven Mikvist.
Sven Mikvist did
directed
one.
A film that you were in with Max.
Yes.
Called Oxen, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah, I've never seen it, so I don't know.
I haven't seen that finished either.
Oh, it wasn't finished?
Oh, it was finished.
Oh, and at the box office, you mean, yeah.
I don't know if it was a box office, but, you know, it was great. But the one we did with Laszlo Benedek that you say.
Knight Rider, was it called?
Yeah, that was terrible because Max was, you know, crazy. And I was his...
You mean the character?
Yeah, I was the evil sister. And I would take him, he was locked in because he was crazy, and I would let him out, and he would murder people, and I would put him back again. It
sounds good. I'd like to see you as the evil sister.
Yeah.
Change of pace.
And Max von Sydow was even more evil.
Well, he's a great evil.
Yeah.
But Ming the Merciless, that was the answer to our trivia question this week, by the way. It's already the... Ballotering. You also directed Max, though, in Private Confessions.
Yes.
And you were a little shy at first about directing him. Were you?
No.
Oh.
No, I was more shy with Alan Josephson in Sofia, because Alan Josephson would say kind of not rude but for fun remarks, and I had told him and Gita Nurby, who played the leads, I told them that Ingmar taught me, you know, if I worked with bad directors, I should listen to them, but inside of me it should be And of course, when I started to direct Alan Josephson and Gita Nurby, and, you know, I would like you to do this and this, Max von Sydow would never do that. When we had done this terrible movie where he was crazy and I was the evil sister, and so we were on a plane from Copenhagen to Stockholm, and I was very nervous because it was over with Ingmar and me, and it had been in all the papers, and I was very shy and so. And I wrote Max a letter saying, I feel like this, and, you know, they are going to look at me. And I was very open in that letter, and I gave it to him because I didn't dare to say it. And I did this on the plane. And then when we almost landed, I said to Max, you know, I think you have to give me back that paper anyway. I didn't trust him. And he said, I ate it up. You see, that is Max von Sydow. He's a knight.
I want to mention something very noticeable in Shame. Your beautiful freckles. And the reason I bring it up is that Ingmar hated makeup. Is that true?
Yes. We were never made up before Christ in Whispers. Oh, beautiful made up.
But you're also made up in Serpent's Egg, but that's grotesque makeup.
Yes, and that was later, and that was a German movie. And
oh, well. Yeah. That explains it.
No, but she was a nightclub singer. And
yes, that, well, we know, yes.
But to all these other movies of Ingmar, we were not allowed to have makeup. And I can understand it, because he felt that the human face naked, and, you know, whatever comes out of a human face, it's sometimes can be disappearing.
You have the most beautiful close-ups in this and every other movie. So, someone once wrote that Estee Lauder would have a heart attack if she is Estee Lauder a woman or if they saw you.
That no, but we had this wonderful cinematographer Sven Nyquist,
yes.
And you know, whatever the makeup could have done. And the hair was good, and the makeup woman was lovely anyway. We had a cinematographer who put lights on you and gave you the shine that you somehow otherwise think you get with the
And Sven makeup. Nykvist is so important to Bergman's later work. After, when did he start with? It was Gunnar Fischer was the earlier cinematographer. It was Persona, Sven's first film?
Yeah.
Ingmar, yeah.
And from then on, it was only Sven Nyquist working with Ingmar. And they had an incredible relationship, and they didn't really speak so much because they both knew, and they knew each other. And so, except in The Passion of Anna, which you're showing tomorrow. There they quarreled.
Because it was color for the first time with them?
Because it was color, and they had a view that this color would be very different than when they saw the rushes and so. And they quarreled, and then it was the revolution with a man who said, you know, we make the creative decisions and so. It was a very sad, and the only sad time ever working with Ingmar, for not the least for Ingmar.
But they made up, and they made a lot of other movies.
Oh, they made up.
Yes.
They made up. And Ingmar was much better verbally saying, you know, you're wrong, and it should be like this and this. Like they would see something when they looked at the rushes and what it looked like. He and Ingmar had a quarrel because, not the real quarrel, but Ingmar said, I want that light not to be there, but it should be there. That would be better. And Sven said, I really think it should be there. It's going to be there. Well, shouldn't it be there, Sven said. And in the end, then Ingmar, because he was the cinematographer, he put the light there. And then the next day, they see the rushes. a light should have been there. And it was very clear. And Ingmar was so furious, and everybody heard that Sven Nykvist doesn't know how to make color, doesn't know to make anything. And Sven Nykvist, he was so shy, he didn't say a word. But the thing is, he was seen when everything was over in the studio. He was seen standing alone in the studio in front of that lamp saying,
And you worked with Sven. He was your DP on Private Confessions.
Yes.
And other movies. Liev, you might know, directed 5 or 6 movies yourself.
Yeah.
2 from Bergman scripts.
2 from Bergman script. And yeah.
How did that happen? Did he come to you? There are several films made.
Well, he came with Private Confessions, and then he was so strong, he could have made that. He did theater things, and I said, why am I doing that? He said, well, you're the only one I know who believes in God, so that's why you're getting that. And so I got it, and I loved doing it. And actually, because of also this Bergman Jubileum that we are all a part of right now, tonight, I adapted it for the stage in Norway for the National Theatre.
Really?
And it's been going 2 years, and with Riksteater in Norway, and we were invited to the Kennedy Center.
Really?
A Norwegian company. And we were shown there, and we got wonderful reviews, and that's when I really found out what an incredible writer Ingmar Bergman is, because we are coming, we are speaking Norwegian, and I had the text that was part of the scenery. The actors were playing, and the text was coming on the wall of the house. And people, they laughed of things that nobody laughed of in Norway or in Sweden, because the words were so clear, because they could watch, but they could also see the words.
The super titles.
What?
The super titles?
It was,
yeah.
Subtitles.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic. And, you know, in the review said, what a great writer Ingmar is, because they also saw the text in a way you don't always see it in a movie, because you're also having the actors and you think you're here because you see what they're doing if you understand the language.
You made movies before Bergman.
Pardon?
You made movies before Bergman.
Yes.
Including one before Persona with Bibi Andersen in Denmark, is that right?
And in that Norway.
In Norway.
Yeah.
And that indirectly led to your meeting Bergman for the first time. Is that true?
Yes, I went to Sweden to visit Bibi because we became the best of friends when we made the movie. We made it in the north of Norway, and we shared a classroom. We lived in a school, and Bibi and I, in the evenings, we would lie in our bed and we'd talk about the future and everything we wanted, and we are still the best of friends. And then I went to Sweden to visit Bibi in Stockholm, and we were walking and there comes Ingmar Bergman, and I couldn't believe I'm meeting Ingmar Bergman, you know.
You knew who he was already.
Pardon?
You knew who he was.
He knew who I was. Because
he knew who you were, you knew who he was.
He was already a giant.
I
mean, he had done so many movies that I had seen, and Bibi had told me a lot about him, and there he comes, and there I am. And they talked together, and they were going to do a movie together, and he looks at me and he says, would you like to be in my movie? And I said, yes. And it was one page. They sent me the script, one page, and I was starring. I was the first foreigner getting a movie role with Ingmar Bergman. But then he became sick, which he sometimes did when he didn't want to do something, and he went to a hospital, and they canceled the movie. And Bibi Andersson and I, we traveled to Poland and to Czechoslovakia, and the embassy got hold of us, and they said, Ingmar Bergman is now well again, and he's going to make another movie and come back to Stockholm. And in the hospital, he was thinking of that meeting on the street, and he said he had pictures of the two of us, and he got the idea of Persona, And
I thought the image he first had was two women in big hats comparing their hands.
No, that was while we did the movie.
Oh, okay.
That he improvised that because he saw Bibi and I comparing hands, and he thought that's lovely. And they're sitting with their sun hats, and he said to Sven, "This should be a scene in the movie," and it was a scene in the movie.
Sounds like the Republican convention, actually. Persona, what was I going to ask you about? Your first movie. You might, well, actually, let me ask you about Persona. You were in awe of him and a little afraid of him at first.
Of course I was afraid. I mean, I was 25 years old and I'm asked to play the lead and I didn't have, I had one word, which is no. And I was terrified. And then he was so good and so nice, and we did the first week or so in Stockholm, and then we went to the island and continuing.
You refilmed things that were shot in Stockholm in Fora.
Yeah, he wasn't so happy with that. And then we went to Fora, and we did the movie, and I understood something. I didn't understand everything in the movie, and neither did Bibi. But I understood that who I was, I somehow was Ingmar. So while he studied me to find out what he could use from me, I studied him too. The way he looked, the way he watched, the way he listened. And I don't think that doing so many movies with Ingmar, I took parts away from the other women because they got parts too. And there was never a quarrel about that with the other women. I took maybe parts away from the man that he wrote parts for me that he otherwise would have written for the men. And he made himself into a woman's voice.
Really?
In several movies. Not also in The Shame.
Really? He had a very bad reputation, though. Didn't he have a nickname? The demon director?
Yeah, but that's not true. That's what they write.
But why has he put that little demon on his signature?
Maybe because people were saying that. Maybe because he felt, like maybe many of us do, he would wake in the night and he called it the hour of the wolf. And he was filled with anxiety. And what he called anxiety was a demon is coming and giving him thoughts and making him restless and making him scared. And he called it the demons.
Right.
And you have to work with your demons. And a lot of them he worked with and they are in his movies. But on the set, he was wonderful. I cannot say ever that people were scared of him. They had great respect for him. Enormous respect.
And loyalty.
Pardon?
Loyalty in both directions.
And great loyalty.
Both
and
the cast and the crew.
Yes.
He had crew people work for him for years.
Yes, most of them. Except in Passion of Anna. That's when...
Oh, that guy, that beatnik,
yeah.
That guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah. Anyway, we have some home movies shot on the set of Persona. You don't know about these? You're looking at me quizzically, which
because
is okay.
I heard a sound.
Oh.
In the audience.
That was not a groan. That they were excited.
Oh.
Oh, okay. All right. Would you like to sit there again, and we'll take a look at these clips? This is actually Bergman shot home movies on pretty much every film, correct?
Yes.
And so these are some of the early ones. From Persona. This is 5 minutes. I think there's 15 minutes exist. You want to use your mic?
Here. Use this one.
Well, here it looks like we are studying the script and coming with comments, but of course that's not true. I mean, this was a typical home movie for Ingmar, you know. And he is not fishing, I can tell you that. And that's Sven Nykvist, and he's shy and lovely and warm and fine. And that's Bibi Andersson. And apparently it's someone else's scene and she's going to be there and give the cues. Yeah.
This is what you've talked about of Ingmar being right behind the camera. And he became your audience.
And this thing he has on his head and the woolen thing he has, he had his whole life. Maybe sometimes he would get something new, but it would always be the same. He never changed his way of dressing. I don't know why the hat is there with a Swedish flag.
Here are the two hats.
And these are the hats when he got the idea to make a scene with us having hats on.
There's Gunnar Bjornström with a Swedish flag.
That's Bibi Andersson.
I think what, I don't think he was very handy around the house.
No, he wasn't.
No. He's inaugurating the track for the tracking shot like it's the Transcontinental Railroad.
So we are opening the railroad. You see, that doesn't happen in a Hollywood movie.
Not at all.
Oh, that's why he has his hat on.
Okay, fun on Furo. Okay. So, as we said, you directed several movies, Private Confessions. You said that there was a problem with directing a script by Bergman. What was that? Do you remember what you said? That if it was good, it would be called a Bergman picture?
Yeah, well, that would happen, and I can understand that. And I remember at the question answer like this, and it would say, you know, a picture by Lee Wulman. And then somebody here said, now, why are you calling that a picture by Lee Wulman? It was written by Ingmar Bergman. So that was a problem. But, you know, today I understand him, that person at that time, because he was great, and I see the greatness of him much more clear today when there's so much hate on TV and we are surrounded by such differences as we obviously are. we need filmmakers like Ingmar, who says the evil of the world is that there are coldness and indifference. And that if you listen to what is said in his movies, that he preaches for communication and contact and understanding that we are all equal and we are all here at the same time for the same reason. We are alive. And I'm very proud to have been working with Ingmar, and I'm very happy that I can be on occasions like this, and that it's fantastic that Film Forum has all these sold-out houses and people who maybe didn't know Ingmar before, and maybe they will listen more than we did at that time to what he is saying. Beware. Beware of who you are and why you are. And yes, I don't know what that was an answer on, but that's...
We were talking about the films you directed. And yes, thank you. When you started out as a director, you said the crew, you were invisible to the crew. You once described it as being invisible to the crew.
It was me because, you know, Henrik Ibsen's Nora... She dances, you know, when things are difficult, and she dances for the man, and she dances for everybody because she finds it so difficult to ask for something for herself, so she dances instead. And I'm a dancer, too. I'm still a dancer, too much, you know. That's why I admired Ingrid Bergman, because of her integrity. And in the beginning, my first movie, which was a Danish movie, I'd written a script, and they said, will you direct? And I said, direct? It was a surprise.
It's called Sophie.
Sophie. Yes. And I called Ingmar, even, from Denmark. They want me to direct this movie. Do you think I can direct? He said, yeah, you can direct. And, you know, what I did for the first week of this movie... It was difficult for them, of course, to get respect for me, because I would say to the cinematographer, I'm going to get coffee. Shall I go and get you some coffee? Or I would ask all the time, can I do something for you? Can I do something for you? So I somehow didn't remember why I was there. I was so scared they wouldn't like me that I thought I had to dance for them. And I learned it, but it took me a week to learn it. So it was my fault if somebody wondered, why is she dancing so much?
But you became a very good director, and your cast loved working with you.
Yes, because I'm good with actors, because I'm an actor myself. And I was afraid with Sophie, because there were wonderful parts. I'd written wonderful parts, and I thought the woman lead, I would have done this and this, and I thought about that. And then I came to the studio... And, you know, we talked a little about it, but not much, in camera. And there I see her, and she's doing surprising things, wonderful things. It's not that Liebermann face coming. It's a wonderful actress, and that is just to do what Ingmar had taught me. Trust them, allow them to be creative, because that's why they are actors, and that's why I'm a director. I give them the material.
That actress you're talking about was Lena Endre? What's her name?
No, I worked with later, Lena Endre, yeah. In one of Ingmar's scripts.
And she worked with Ingmar on stage a lot, but not in films.
No, which is strange, yeah. Because she's an incredible actress, incredible.
And she's in Faithless.
In Faithless, with a film. She played the lead, and she had a long monologue there where she is telling the writer, which is called Bergman, although Ingmar said it had nothing to do with him, but it was just called Bergman, and that was Erlan Josephson. And she has a long monologue where she says, I met another man, and I fell in love, and we decided to live together. And I sat in the bed with my daughter of 7 years old, and I told her, I'm going to move away for a while, and you will be alone with Daddy, and then we will see what shall happen. and then the little child of 7 gets out of the bed and walks along the floor and turns the corner in a little white T-shirt. 7 years old, and she was so thin and so beautiful. And that's a long monologue. And Lena Endre, great actress, she did this scene, and it's like 7 minutes long monologue. And when it was over, the whole crew, they applauded. But I knew there is more to Lena Endre because I know her personally. And I went and I said to her, you know, this thing which you are telling your daughter, and you did it so beautiful, it's a great actress thing, but you know, for the rest of your life, whatever happens to you, you will see your little daughter, 7 years old, climbing out of the bed in a little white T-shirt with her shoulders up like this, and she walks away from you and around the corner. Don't forget, that is going to be part of your life forever. She did like this, and she did it one more time. I have never seen a close-up so fantastic. It wasn't actressy. It was a real human being. And yeah, that's why it's good to work with actors, because I know what words moves me, and I know what words will be right for them. It is to show what is it within yourself that is part of this thing you're doing right now. Find that, use that.
As you said, Erland Josephson played the aging director named Bergman, yeah. No relation. I found this quote from him, Erland, when he was asked about the difference between acting for Bergman and you. He said, quote, Lieb is very brave with the sentimental feelings, with the good feelings, with the positive feelings. She doesn't need to tell stories about desperation and destruction to be brave, which I think is a nice compliment, but it sounds like a bit of a dig at his friend Ingmar, maybe a little bit. Do you think it's unfair that people think of him as all gloom and doom?
No, he is
no,
the
it
opposite.
Is, yeah, that's what I'm trying to get at, yes.
Yeah. Oh, no, he's the opposite. First of all, also being on his sets, there was so much laughter. You can't believe it. And when we did Fateless with this genius Lena Endre I just told you about, Ingmar was forbidden because I wasn't dancing now. I said, you cannot come on the set. I don't want you on
except
the set.
Except the last day, I think.
And the last day, I say, you can come on the set because that would be a surprise for everybody. And I'm not going to tell anyone, I said. And Ingmar came in the lunch hour. He's so childish. He came in the lunch hour. And it was in a hotel room in a bed. And Lena Endre was to lie in that bed. And so, and Ingmar came and he said, oh, that's the bed. He said, oh, I will hide in the bed and put the cover over me. You know, oh, my God, Ingmar. And so we did that, you know. And then lunch is over and Lena Endre comes in and we see the cover. It's going up and down and he's laughing. And so she had to pretend she goes to the bed. And, oh, she's so scared. And so, and nobody loved that as much as Ingmar. And he has done comedies and allowed to do comedies. And you show also in your Bergman thing here in the beginning, you show before each movie, you are showing something.
A trailer.
Yeah, the trailer. And you see he has so many wonderful comic
moments, even in Shame.
And
you know,
even in
Von
Shame.
Von Sydow trying to kill the chickens, the hens.
Yeah,
it's right out of the Gold Rush.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But people
did you laugh, by the way? I do, you know. Because people are afraid to laugh. People are afraid to laugh during
it. There.
There's a lot
he
of humor.
He is not gloomy.
It's not vaudeville humor, but
it's
humor.
He's human.
He used to write he wrote in his notebooks, be funny, be humorous, put humor in whenever he can.
Yeah.
He didn't put any in Cries and Whispers, I don't think. But two other Bergman actresses became directors, Gunnar Lindblom and Ingrid Tulin.
Gunnar Lindblad, I haven't seen what Ingrid Thulin did, to be honest, but I've seen movies that Gunnar Lindblom did, and she's really very, very good, really good, both theater and film. I mean, more or less the same as me. She's a good person, a great actress. I mean, she's done wonderful things for Ingmar Bergman.
Do you still think directing is a men's club?
No, I never thought it was a men's club, because like Ingmar liked to work with women, because he said women are not so scared of being naked in the face. Men can be more scared of that. And I think a woman director is the same. I think a very good woman director is not scared of really talking about feelings and going into the feelings, not by saying what you as an actor should do, but telling a story about herself or somebody else she knows that can have a parallel to what she's asking of the actor.
Oddly, your first director was a woman. You made a film in 1959, which scandalized your family.
Yeah, because they were very Christian, and I can understand them, because I'm in the water and I'm supposed to be naked, but you don't show that. But then I turn a little and you see a little.
Actually,
breast.
I just saw it. You see a little more than a little, yeah.
You see more?
Yes, I think
well,
so.
Well, and you see, yeah, I'm already lying on that, because I did at the time.
It was prohibited.
I did at the
18
time.
18 and over.
I said, I didn't know they took that shot, that you could see the Ullmann behind as well. And that, I had a woman director, and
Edith
it was very
Carlson.
Bad of me. Yeah.
It's actually not a bad film. It's kind of like Summer with Monica. At least it was inspired by it. It doesn't have the artistry. But you're radiant in it. I was going to show a clip, but I thought you might hit me.
Yeah, I would.
Do you mind?
But I wanted to say about the woman director.
Yes, Edith Carlson, I think her name was.
It was even a pastor who went to the court and said they should do something about that movie. And my family turned away from me. And I went to the papers and said, I didn't know they were shooting like that. And the woman director, she said, I would have done the same if I had been Liv Ullmann. I really understand it. She was a really good person. And I said later I was sorry. But I still heard myself kind of lie. I didn't really do it.
It's kind of a sexploitation film, but it's very nicely done. I can tell you a line from it if you'd like. One of your lines is, I'm not a whore. They get paid for it. I do it for pleasure. That's kind of, it's on those lines. But you're very beautiful in it. And it's a potboiler, but what can I say? It was your first starring role. I have the poster. Would you like to see that?
No.
Okay. Raymond, is there any way we can skip that to get to the last one? The next two. Okay. Yeah, maybe it's a little embarrassing. I don't know. You had a brief moment as a Hollywood star. Don't look at me that way. Yeah.
Well, I did a lot of movies, but I had 1 year as a Hollywood star because they thought I had been nominated for an Oscar, and I was kind of pretty at the time, and I had a wonderful luggage of Ingmar Bergman doing films, and I came to Hollywood, and they said, oh, you're so sweet, you're so lovely, and any movie I could do. And me and my agent, we did very strange choices. And they said, you know, here comes Greta Garbo and whatever. And I did something called Lost Horizons.
Yes.
And it's on the list of the 50 worst films ever made.
It did win the Golden Turkey Award that year.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yes.
It got everything. And then it 40 Carats, which was a comedy. And I was to be a 40-year-old New York sophisticated lady, and I was 30 years old, and I wasn't that sophisticated, and falling in love with a 20-year-old boy, and they gave me somebody who was my age. And so it wasn't a comedy. And so I closed down that studio, and this happens to be true. I closed down one studio. And then Columbia.
Was that Columbia? Columbia, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. Yeah. I don't know. But there was another studio, and they said, no, no, remember, you know, Greta Garbo, she did Queens and so, and she should do Queen Christina. That would be wonderful. And I did Queen Christina, and then I did another one, which I really like, with Gene Hackman.
Zandi's Bride, Zandi's which was Bride. Jan
but
Troell directed.
Unfortunately, that studio went down.
Well, they were all going out of business.
They were all
you
going
can't
out
be
of business, but it looked like it was me because I did it all. I did it.
I think Ross
year.
Hunter should take some of the blame.
But I was
here.
Lucky because when I had done that, I went right back to Norway, no, to Sweden, and I did Scenes from a Marriage and sat on an outdoor toilet and felt, I'm belonging.
But
here.
you were on the cover of Time, Newsweek, People, even TV Guide.
Yeah.
Something, The New Yorker. Can we see the last slide? The New Yorker. This is The New Yorker. I'm sick and tired of reading how perfect Lee Ullman is.
Yeah. Well, I had great fun, you know. I had great fun, and I never saw it as a tragedy. And I had, you know, then I did other films, and I did on Broadway. I did a lot.
You did the last Richard Rodgers musical.
Yes.
Did you? Never mind.
I said the same then too.
Yes.
You know, I really cannot sing. I really cannot dance. But they had seen that I was so perfect, and my my producer said, "Doesn't matter. You're so sweet and you're so nice." And then he took me to Richard Rodgers, who was already almost sick and very old, and he was sitting at his piano, this wonderful man. And I said to him, "I really cannot sing." And he said, "Oh, doesn't matter. They don't all sing, but I know how to do it. I just want to know where your voice is." And he said, "Just sing 'Happy Birthday' for me." And he smiled, and he was so nice. And so I sang 'Happy Birthday' for him, and he aged, you know, 10 years. And I did the musical, I Remember Mama, and it was the last thing he wrote. And you can imagine, it was wonderful music. And I had 6 or 7 solos and dancing. And you could think that, you know, somebody would feel bad about that. He was in the theater every evening, and he stood in the wings, and he was nice and good to me. And I will never forget it, but it was his last musical, and somehow...
And it ran 8 months.
Yeah, but that was because...
Richard Rodgers.
Richard Rodgers, yeah.
Well, we think you're perfect. And I know... I know you once said, "I hate being called an icon," but I hate to break this to you. You really are an icon. I think everyone here agrees. And you have also said that you sometimes get sick and tired of talking about Ingmar and yourself. Well, we're doing this again tomorrow, so that'll be the last time, okay? Lee Ullman.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Film Forum's podcast. Visit us online at filmforum.org, where you can learn more about our films, memberships, subscribe to our free weekly e-newsletter, and to find out the ways you can support our nonprofit cinema. And if you have the time, please visit our iTunes page and leave a rating and review of our podcasts. Copyright to this program belongs to The Moving Image Incorporated.